Life appeared on our planet more than 3.5 billion years ago. This one lived through periods where the ice extended until the equator, as well as sweltering periods without ice at the poles. The tropical forests of these geological eras have become, today, the habitat of reindeer. The sea level exceeded the present level by 200 meters, or 650 feet, transforming the continents into archipelagos. Then it went down 100 meters, or 330 feet, below the present level, creating stretches of land that are now submerged. The continents moved closer together, and then further apart. The animals, 600 million years old, are like something out of a science fiction movie. Although dinosaurs are the undisputed stars of the Mesozoic period, we often forget that 400 million years before their existence, a multitude of animals preceded them. In one way or another, their universe mutated, following climatic changes, the lack of food, or the arrival of new predators. Most species failed to adapt and became extinct. Nevertheless, they left their traces on Earth by lingering in fossils. Thus, these remains provided a detailed picture of what life was like on Earth before the dinosaurs. Dear traveler, good morning. Today we're leaving for a distant journey in the heart of the Proterozoic era and Paleozoic eras. That is to say, more than 400 million years ago, before the reign of the dinosaurs. A journey into the past to discover surprising and exciting animals. A journey where you will discover our planet devastated by the worst extinction episodes it has ever known. But before leaving for a new incredible adventure, think of liking the video and subscribing to the channel to not miss anything. Thank you all, and have a good trip. Let's go back in time, far, far before the era of the dinosaurs, when the Earth was only a huge snowball, totally frozen, covered with glaciers from the poles to the tropics. When volcanic eruptions produced CO2 in large quantities, a greenhouse effect was created, allowing the planet to warm up. The ice melted and different land masses came together to form a supercontinent called Rondinia. This one is surrounded by a unique ocean called Moravia. Scientists used the appearance and disappearance of animals to divide the historical periods of the Earth's evolution. These periods are in turn divided into eras. This set of four eras covers the last 635 million years. Let's begin our journey at the Eddaicardian period, between 635 and 542 million years before our era. This marks the end of the Upper Proterozoic era and the beginning of the history of aquatic fauna. On the bottom of Moravia, bacteria and microbes, brought by the rain, began to take life. In 1946, Australian geologist Reg Sprigg was having lunch in the hills of Ediacara, Australia. Suddenly, he noticed strange jellyfish-shaped imprints in 600 million-year-old rocks. He had just made one of the most important fossil discoveries of all time, the Dickinsonia. Paleontologists estimate, based on fossils found in Australia and Russia, that the oldest animal lived in the sea some 560 million years ago. Dickinsonia, this soft-bodied animal, was oval and covered with grooves formed by the sections of its body. Although it could grow up to 1.4 meters or 4.6 feet long, it was as thick as a sheet of cigarette paper. It was only a few millimeters thick. Was it an animal, a plant, or a mushroom? To answer this question, it was necessary to wait until 2018, when a team of paleontologists detect in Australian fossils molecules of fat specific to multicellular animals. However, this discovery is not enough to certify that Dickinsonia belongs to the animal kingdom. It would just as well be related to jellyfish or sea anemones, or even be a giant flattened worm. In 1957, three English schoolchildren found a leaf-shaped fossil in a forest in Leicestershire, which they brought to a geologist at the local university. Named Charnia masoni, it looks like a fern. The discovery of other Charnia fossils in formerly submerged rocks indicate that it did not belong to the plant kingdom. This animal lived in deep water, where the lack of light did not allow plants to develop. Since its discovery, other specimens were extracted from rocks located in Canada, Russia, and Australia. Charnia had no skeleton or shell, and its body was soft. Most of the fossils are about 20 centimeters long. However, a related species reported from Canada, Charnia wardi, was up to 2 meters or 6.5 feet long. It is assumed that it anchored itself to the seabed with a disc or spike and grew like a leaf on its stem. Not having a mouth or an intestine, it probably fed by filtering or absorbing nutrients from the water, as do its close relatives today, the crinoids. Another fossil dating from the Edikaran period also comes from the Ediacara Hills. Named Kimberella, this animal measured up to 15 centimeters long, 5 centimeters wide, and 4 centimeters high. That is to say, up to 6 inches long, 2 inches wide, and 2 inches high. It had a single, wide, muscular foot for moving around. A soft, yet robust shell was dedicated to retracting its soft body in case of threat. In certain rocks, imprints of the passage of Kimberella present a dentition. Would it be the ancestor of the snail? It has all the characteristics that we find today in this animal, and we can clearly claim that Kimberella is the oldest mollusk. Still in the hills of Ediacara, paleontologists made the discovery of other fossils, including Trabachidium. This animal lived in shallow water, with a diameter of 4 centimeters, or almost 2 inches. It was buried in the seabed, leaving just a few millimeters of its hemispherical body exposed. On the top, three grooves started from the center and curved towards the edges, like the Breton Triskel. These created whirlpools that channeled water to three wells on the upper side of the animal. Thus, it could extract food particles. According to the researchers, the closest relatives of the Trabachidium today could be anemones or starfish. The first animal to have a shell is called Claudina, and it seemed very widespread. Fossils were found in limestone rocks in Africa, Asia, North and South America, Europe, and Antarctica. Its shell consisted of a stack of open cones forming a tube, which corresponded to its habitat. The largest specimens measured 15 centimeters, or 6 inches long, and 6 millimeters wide. How did it feed? What was its way of life? Did it land on the sea floor, or could it bury itself there? All of this remains a mystery. In any case, the way these marine animals fed probably clarified the water and enriched its oxygen content. This favored the appearance of more mobile animals, more energetic, as well as the development of their eyes. Holes drilled in some Claudina shells inspire attempts at predation by one animal on another. Thus, the stage is set for the great confrontation to come between predators and prey in the Paleozoic era. At the end of the Proterozoic era, Rondinia, the supercontinent of the time, broke up into several continents. First of all, around 560 MA, three continents detached and became individualized: Laurentia, Siberia, and the immense Gondwana. Laurentia includes the current North America without New England and Newfoundland, but with the north of Ireland and Scotland. Siberia corresponds to present-day Russia. As for Gondwana, it includes Africa, South America, Antarctica, India, China, Southeast Asia, Australia, and Southern Europe. 520 million years ago, a new continent named Baltica broke away from Rondinia. It is similar to Northern Europe. Progressively, the openings of a new ocean, the Iapetus, separates Laurentia from Baltica and Gondwana. The Cambrian period begins, marking the beginning of the Paleozoic era and the appearance of new life, exclusively marine. The most famous fossil site of the Cambrian period is located in British Columbia, Canada. It is the Burgess Shale, discovered in 1909 by the paleontologist Charles Doolittle Walcott. This deposit has delivered exceptionally well-preserved remains of a rich fauna of invertebrates that lived in the Middle Cambrian 520 million years ago. If you had been diving during the Cambrian period looking for macroscopic fauna, you would certainly have encountered Hallucigenia. In 1977, a strange fossil caught the attention of the British paleontologist Simon Conway Morris. Extremely thin, it measured only 2 centimeters in length, less than 1 inch long. With a soft trunk bristling with spines, it was supported by 10 pairs of high legs, as if it walked on stilts. The 7 pairs of hind legs were equipped with claws, which must have been used to move. As for the 3 pairs of front legs, longer and thinner, they seemed to be covered with a kind of feathers. Were they sensory organs? Or did they have the function of retaining food suspended in the water and bringing it to the mouth surrounded by teeth? The second hypothesis seems plausible, because an opening in the head is lined with spines. Also, further back, we find in the throat a set of teeth in the shape of needles. It is assumed, therefore, that the food was chewed once, and then a second time, swallowed in the throat. Thanks to the latest advances in electron microscopy, the Hallucigenia fossils also reveals a pair of dark spots on its head. These could correspond to the eyes. As a result of these scientific advances allowing a more accurate description of Hallucigenia, scientists linked it to Onychophorus, a group represented by the parapates, vermiform animals living in tropical forests. They're relatives of the arthropods, which include crustaceans and insects. Another strange animal from the group of arthropods intrigues scientists. It is Wawaxia. The first fossilized specimens were discovered in the Burgess Shale, but others have been found in China, Russia, Australia, and the Czech Republic. Its ovoid body, 5 centimeters or 2 inches long, was covered with 8 rows of overlapping plates called sclerites. The sclerites, which acted as a carapace to escape predator attacks, were topped by 2 rows of spikes that could reach up to 5 centimeters. Or 2 inches in height. Moreover, the scales of this natural armor, loaded with microscopic structures, reflected the light like the back of a beetle. This was enough to dazzle and dissuade attackers from approaching. Wawaxia was hospitable, to say the least, because according to the examination of fossils, it turns out that shells, similar to a clam, lived on its back. It is therefore assumed that Wawaxia simply lay on the seafloor and never buried itself. Its food consisted of bacteria found on the ocean floor. To tell the truth, specialists are struggling to agree on where Wawaxia fits in the tree of life. Some point to its close relatives among the modern marine worms. Others suggest that since its mouth organ is reminiscent of that of a snail, it would be its ancestor. Then, there are those who believe that it is neither a worm nor a mollusk, but a representative of a distinct group now extinct. Among the anthropods, the star of these geological eras remains the tribolite. They were ubiquitous in the Cambrian seas and occupied every type of habitat, from coral reefs to the ocean floor, for over 270 million years. To date, over 20,000 species have been recorded. Tribolites come in all shapes and sizes, from the size of a fingernail to 70 centimeters or 30 inches. Most species were 3 to 10 centimeters long, or 1 inch to 4 inches long. Its body was divided into three parts, simultaneously in the direction of the width and in that of the length. It had a head composed of three lobes, from which it took its name, a thorax and a tail. The head included a central part bordered of two cheeks, which carried the eyes composed of hundreds of facets, similar to those of a dragonfly. The body was split into additional segments, each carrying two attachments, such as antennae, mouth organs, or legs. This body pattern differed from species to species. Some had spines that stretched and twisted into odd shapes, while others had eyes perched on stalks above their bodies. Most of them roamed the seabed in search of food, and their morphology gave them a great ability to live in their aquatic environment. Their diets were varied. Predators, scavengers, silt eaters, or even filter feeders. Their closest existing relatives are thought to be spiders and scorpions. A distant cousin of the trilobite, the Morella was dubbed the lace crab by paleontologist Charles Doolittle Walcott, who made its discovery in the Burgess Shale. They abounded in the Cambrian waters, as more than 25,000 specimens were discovered. Measuring up to 2.5 centimeters or up to 1 inch, it has two long extensions at the top of the head, which go backwards, giving it a horseshoe look. Further down, two pairs of slender antennae at the mouth probably allow it to orient itself on the sandy bottom. Another pair of mobile appendages at the lower level of the head, more robust and provided with hairs, had perhaps a function of propulsion to help it move. The rest of the body is composed of 17 to 26 segments. So, how did the Morella feed? Several hypotheses are put forward. It could be a hunter and scavenger. Or did it filter water with the help of its multiple legs, equipped with filiform excrescences? The mystery remains. Let's continue our discovery of strange Cambrian marine creatures with the cephalopod Nectocharis terex. Although very little is known about this animal, fossils collected from the Burgess Shale provide invaluable insight into the anatomy and lifestyle of this primitive creature. Its cylindrical body, soft and flattened when viewed from above, was 2 to 5 centimeters long, or up to 2 inches. It had two dorsolateral fins, resembling a hybrid of ray and squid. These probably allowed it to swim quickly and agilely in the water. Also, it had two long tentacles in the extension of its rigid head. The Nectocharis is a singular creature because it is endowed with a pair of rod-shaped eyes. From the base of its mouth, a sort of flexible cone opens onto an internal cavity containing a pair of gills. This chimney is reminiscent of the siphon, a tubular organ of today's cephalopods, which they used to swim backwards. Scientists assume that Nectocharis used it to propel itself through the water. It probably fed on small organisms such as plankton and bacteria while living in shallow waters near shore. All of these anatomical features are consistent with the hypothesis that Nectocharis terex is the ancestor of octopuses and squids. Here is one of the most fascinating animals of the Cambrian, Opabinia. Its anatomy is quite strange. Its body of 7 centimeters or 3 inches, soft and segmented, gives it a shrimp-like appearance. It had 5 eyes perched on small stalks, 2 in front and 3 in the back, as well as a flexible proboscis ending in kind of a claw, which was probably used to bring food to the mouth. In the absence of powerful jaws, it had to feed on soft food by extracting worms from the ground. Opabinia was devoid of legs. The 15 segments of the body were bordered of articulated lobes, which perhaps supported crawling and swimming. The caudal fin, in the shape of a fan, reminds a little of that of the lobster. This one must have helped it to move and to direct itself. Many scientists saw in Opabinia a unique specimen, but the careful comparison of numerous living or fossil species led the researchers to relate it to other animals with soft and segmented body, even, by far, to arthropods. Let's make room now for the Cambrian sea monster, Anomalocaris. Its body resembles that of a giant shrimp, since it is up to 1 meter long, or 3 feet. It was a formidable hunter, the largest aquatic predator of this period. Armed with spikes, the mouth organs hang under the head. Its round mouth, flattened and composed of plates, looks like a camera shutter. Its prey of choice? Probably tribolites, because paleontologists have observed bite marks on some specimens corresponding to its jaw. However, paleontologist James Whitey Hagedorn suggested that this predator was unable to eat hard-shelled prey, so Anomalocaris may have fed on triboliths during the mutation period, but it was certainly more of a threat to worms. From Greenland to Australia, a few dozen specimens have been found in Cambrian rocks. The shape of the mouth parts varying from one species to another, it is assumed that they differed in their diet. Some appear to have specialized in predation, while others scavenged the muddy seabed or filtered water to capture tiny creatures. With a diameter of 2 centimeters or 1 inch, the compound rod-shaped eyes were as large as any insect's and had up to 16,000 facets. Even after the appearance of fish, Anomalocaris remained one of the largest marine creatures until the Ordovician period. About the size of an inch, Picaea gracilens was not particularly large, not exceeding 5 centimeters in length. It is one of the oldest known species of the chordate group, to which all vertebrates belong, including man. Picaea looked like an eel. It did not have a skeleton, but a noctochord, a flexible cartilaginous structure that ran along its spindle-shaped body like a spinal column. 100 myomeres, small muscular packets separated by connective tissue, allowed Picaea to swim while undulating. The entrails of certain specimens contain fossilized mud, an indication that it grazed the seafloor. By the presence of muscles, nerves, and blood vessels, scientists evoke a distant relationship with fish, reptiles, and other animals with skeletons. However, certain aspects of its morphology still remain enigmatic. For example, those 2 long tentacles at the top of the head and those multiple pairs of small appendages just below on the ventral side. Millocomyngia is also part of the group of chordates. Smaller than Picaea, its body does not exceed the size of a paperclip. Their fossils come from the Mao Chinchon Shale in Shangjiang, southern China. It resembles a fish with fins, muscles, a skull, and even gills. Many researchers consider it to be the first known vertebrate, although it does not have a bony structure, but a soft cartilage skeleton. Thus, during the Cambrian, life took off in an unprecedented way. This period was a springboard for the explosion of aquatic animal diversity observed during the Ordovician period. The Ordovician period spans 65 million years, beginning 500 million years ago. It is the period of greatest continental fragmentation in the Paleozoic. The beginning of the closure of the Iapetus Ocean brings Laurentia closer to Baltica. The Caledonian orogeny then takes place, which is at the origin of the old massifs of Europe and North America, including the Appalachians. The opening of the Rayic Ocean separates Avalonia from Gondwana. Avalonia, named after the mythical island of Avalon, where Excalibur, King Arthur's sword, was forged, included England, Wales, southeastern Ireland, northern France, Nova Scotia, and New England. As for the Tornquist Sea, it separates Baltica and Avalonia. This period saw a new explosion of animal diversity. The fossil records show an increasing number of deep water species. Planktonophagous animals swimming in the open ocean, and predators well equipped to catch them. Built up by sponges and other creatures, the reefs grew and multiplied, providing shelter for more animals. At the same time, some took their first steps on land and brief excursions out of the water, leaving their footprints on the shore. The vegetation at that time was mostly moss and lichen. Much of the primitive fauna lived in the shallow seas, close to shore, but for any animal that could swim far enough, the open ocean offered a vast territory, new food resources, and perhaps fewer predators. Along with crustaceans and other arthropods, nautiloid is a mollusk cousin to squid and octopus. By the fossils found in rocks of the Ordovician, 470 million years old, they proved that they were present in the whole world. They are animals that gradually adapted to life in deep water. It is thought that the first nautiloids were planktivores that went up and down in the water, filling the cavities of their shells with gas and then emptying them. To do this, they modified the chemical concentration of their body fluids. The increase of this concentration transfers the water of the shell towards the body. Thus, the latter fills with gas. When the quantity of gas contained in the shell rises, the animal also rises, and conversely. Then, the nautiloids gained in mobility. They moved by projecting a jet of water by a hole close to the head, and hunted with the help of their tentacles, which carried the food to the hard beak. While most had shells only about 10 centimeters long, others were huge, and could reach up to 6 meters, or 20 feet. At the time, they were at the top of the aquatic food chain. Damaged fossil shells show that the nautiloids probably attacked each other. Traces of color preserved on some fossils even suggest that some species practiced camouflage. Indeed, on the upper half of the shell, gray and brown bands allowed the animal to blend into the dark waters. Imagine a giant tadpole, and you'll have a good idea of the aspect of the first vertebrates. Among these, Sacabompospis janvary is one of the oldest and best known. It is often presented as the pioneer of animals with complete skeleton. With a maximum length of 25 centimeters or 10 inches, it is particularly surprising by its head equipped with bony shields on the top and bottom. These shields probably protected it from predators, especially large invertebrates. The rest of the body was covered with long scales. It had no jaws and had to pick up or suck up food from the bottom of the water, then crush it at the level of the throat. The eyes were located between two small nostrils, and the mouth was armed with very thin plates. The Sacabompospis evolved in shallow waters, close to the shore. Some fossils have scratches on their belly made by scraping the seafloor. Today, the largest animals in the sea are vertebrates, namely whales and sharks, although some deep-sea squids compete closely with them. But hundreds of millions of years ago, huge specimens ruled the seas, including the Pterygotus anglicus. Its name means winged fish because the Swiss naturalist Louis Agassiz was the first to describe it in 1839, believed it was a large fish. In fact, it belongs to a group of extinct arthropods, otherwise known as sea scorpions. With a body that could reach up to 1.8 meters, or 6 feet, it was related to the giant Eurypterids. Other species were, however, smaller, only about 50 centimeters. Most of them lived in shallow water, but their appearance around the same time and points of the planet, separated by vast oceans, attest that they were perfect swimmers. Pterygotus moved with 4 pairs of legs. A 5th pair looked more like flippers. It was armed with 2 forelimbs, 2 powerful claws, perfect for seizing and killing its prey. Its eyesight must have been excellent, because it was endowed with a pair of gigantic lateral eyes, added to a 2nd pair of smaller eyes placed in the center of its head. Its body was built for swimming, and its flat tail was probably used as fins to propel itself. Despite its large size and fearsome appearance, Pterygotus anglicus ultimately did not survive the catastrophic mass extinction that ended its aquatic reign. Aquatic ancestors of millipedes, euthycarcinoids, are arthropods with an external skeleton, a pointed tail, and an articulated body with up to 28 pairs of legs, about the size of a large shrimp of about 10 centimeters or 4 inches. They look more like a cross between a lobster and a woodlouse. The rocks that contain the oldest recorded fossils of euthycarcinoids date from the end of the Cambrian. Scientists suggest that they were the first animals to venture onto land, where the shoreline was lined with microbes and bacteria, a meal served on a platter if you could reach it at low tide. Moreover, venturing out of the water offered a way out of predator attacks. A major extinction event occurred at the end of the Ordovician, marked by the disappearance of 85% of existing species. It affected bottom-dwelling organisms such as triboliths, echinoderms, and brachiopods, as well as pelagic forms such as nautiloids. This mass extinction has been linked to the glaciation occurring at the time. The South Pole was then located on the current Niger, and a large part of Gondwana was covered by a thick ice cap, twice as large as the current Antarctic ice cap. As a result, sea levels dropped by 50 meters or 165 feet, drying out the shallow seas where life once flourished. In addition, an anoxic event, which is an extreme decrease in oxygen levels in seawater, destabilizes the ecosystem of marine life. What was an ocean teeming with life is now an ocean of desolation. This crisis lasted for 1 to 2 million years, to give way to the Silurian period, 435 million years ago. At the beginning of this third Paleozoic period, which began 444 million years ago, and lasted for more than 28 million years, the melting of the polar ice caps caused a general rise in the levels of the oceans and shallow seas that covered the continental shelves. After the closure of the Tornquist Ocean, the Avalonian landmass welded to the Laurentia and Baltica landmasses. Thus, the continent of the Old Red Sandstone, abbreviated CVGR, is formed, today variously called La Europa, Euramerica, and La Russia. The immense continent Gondwana is then separated from the CVGR by the Rayic Ocean and the Paleotethys. The Silurian marks the beginning of the Age of Fishes, with the development of agnathic vertebrates, that is to say, fishes without jaws, possessing a bony external armor named ostracoderms. However, jawed vertebrates, otherwise known as nathostomes, which appeared in the Ordovician, are also present. It was in the Silurian that the terrestrialization of invertebrates, i.e. oligochaetes, arthropods, and gastropods, occurred. The oldest plant macrofossils are from the Silurian, but they are rare. After the mass extinctions of the late Ordovician, life proliferated and diversified again. Coral reefs are numerous on the island arcs bordering the Panthalassa and the Paleotethys, as well as on the bottom of shallow seas. The generalized warm climate allows them to largely exceed the intertropical zone. The corals are mainly tetracoralliarids, also called rugose corals and tabulate. The emblematic animals of the Silurian are the ureterids. Already present in the Ordovician, their history continued, and they were never so diversified both in shape and size. The most important event among vertebrates is the appearance of the jaw, formed from the second branchial arc of the agnatha. The first jawed vertebrates, or gnathostomes, were the acanthodians, with spiny fins, and the placoderms, whose front part of the body was enclosed in a bony carapace. Appearing in the lower Silurian, the placoderm was the first vertebrate with movable jaws and teeth. It also inaugurated an even number of fins, which later evolved into limbs in terrestrial vertebrates. Specimens of a 380 million-year-old species found in the Gogo Formation, a fossil site in Western Australia, contained fossilized embryos. The placoderm is thus one of the first known vertebrates to have produced well-developed young instead of laying eggs. But the most obvious and strange thing about placoderm is the bony plates that cover the head and upper body. This armor proves that the Silurian seas were a merciless environment where fishes devoured each other, not to mention the threat of invertebrate predators such as nautiloids and sea scorpions. The placoderm waited for its prey, lurking on the sea floor or hunting in the open sea. Dunkleosteus stands out as the largest placoderm, being able to reach up to 6 meters long and equipped with jaws capable of exerting a force of 500 kilograms. Other specimens, on the contrary, fed on marine plants. For example, Titanicthys, one of the most impressive by its 8 meter or 25 foot length and its weight of 1 ton, was deprived of teeth. No doubt it filtered plankton in suspension in the water, like the current whale shark. Nevertheless, giant placoderms were rare, and the majority of them measured between 30 centimeters and 1 meter, or between 10 inches and 3 feet. Distributed throughout the world, placoderms lived in freshwater or in the sea. When they became extinct at the end of the Devonian, they left the oceans to two groups: the bony skeleton fishes, to which most of today's fishes belong, and which include the ancestors of terrestrial vertebrates, and the soft cartilage sharks and rays. According to acanthodian fossils, sharks, along with their cousins the rays, are the descendants of this group of gnathostome vertebrates, which appeared some 400 million years ago. Acanthodians are characterized by long bony spines located at the front of their pectoral fins, but also of their dorsal and anal fins. Their body was covered with tiny and quadrangular scales. Like sharks, they have a heterocercal tail, which means that it has two unequal lobes. Some acanthodians were predators who had large eyes to spot prey. Others, without teeth, were content to filter water. These predators flourished all over the world, colonizing seas and rivers, only to become extinct in the Permian, around 250 million years before our era. The invasion of the continents continued with the appearance of the first terrestrial arthropods and larger plants like Cooksonia. Terrestrial life is limited to a narrow wetland band around rivers and lagoons. The best candidates for the title of land animal pioneers are the ancestors of today's millipedes and scolopendras, the myriapod group. Pneumodesmus pneumani was a relatively small creature, measuring just over 2 centimeters long. However, its most striking feature was its large number of legs, it had up to 40 pairs. The holes running along its body allowed it to breathe, bringing oxygen to its cells. They also attest that the animal lived on land. Paleophonus is one of the oldest known scorpions. Although its exact size is unknown, it was probably no more than 8 centimeters or 3 inches long. This small size may have been an adaptation to the lack of food available at the time. Its ovoid body was flat, and its long tail had a stinger at the end. The most striking feature of Paleophonus is its large claw-like arms. These may have been used for capture and defense, and could have posed a serious threat to smaller prey. On the vegetation side, a primitive type of plant appeared, the Cooksonia. The size of Cooksonia varied from a few centimeters to a meter in height. Its microscopic analysis reveals a functional vascular system. This allowed it to transport water and nutrients from the soil through the stem, thus ensuring a constant supply of water. Thus, Cooksonia could easily adapt and survive hot and dry spells. Stomata have also been noted in Cooksonia fossils. These are small holes in the wall of the cuticle, allowing gas exchanges with the cells. It is thus about its respiratory system, without which it would not have succeeded in developing. Deprived of roots, leaves, and flowers, it is composed of thin branch stems. These stems end in a trumpet-shaped structure called a sporangium, which is used to disseminate spores far from the plant to colonize the surrounding area. These small plants dominated the continents for 40 million years. They were an important stepping stone in the evolution of land plants. Their descendants include some of today's most familiar plants, such as ferns, mosses, and flowering plants. Also, by spreading oxygen in the atmosphere and stabilizing soils, they also participated in the arrival of land animals. The Devonian is located between the Silurian and the Carboniferous. This period extends from 418 to 359 million years before our era. The Devonian period is marked by the disappearance of the Rayic Ocean, which allows the supercontinent Gondwana to continue its slow drift towards Laurussia. It was during this period that the transition from fish to tetrapods, animals with 4 limbs and a neck, took place, as well as the appearance of hexapods, grouping insects, and arthropods with 3 pairs of legs. Apart from the Panthalassa, most of the Paleocene inherited from the Lower Paleozoic closed during the Devonian, resulting in a paleogeographic configuration of the pre-Pangaea type. The first forests were established in the equatorial regions of Laurussia, participating in the photosynthetic activity that allowed the development of the ozone layer. All these events took place under a globally warm climate, responsible for the development of oxidized siliciclastic sediments, the old red sandstone, and carbonate rocks where reef formations proliferated. The uniformly warm climate of the early Devonian period favored the development of reefs. The building animals are invertebrates living in colonies called stromatopores. Tabulate corals and tetracoral lyre corals from the Silurian period still cover the ocean floor. Placoderms continued to dominate the ecosystems. Thus, Dunkleosteus, these formidable predators, are challenging the giant Eurypterids. Although they were already present at the time, sharks were not yet the supreme predators of the seas. They were joined by various representatives of groups of scaly fishes, namely the Actinopterygians, Acanthodonians, and Sarcopterygians. Graptolites, classified among algae, sponges, hydrozoans, bryozoans, and pterobranchs, disappeared at the end of the Lower Devonian. Only one family of benthic graptolites passes into the Carboniferous. The bottom of the seas is still dominated by brachiopods, of which only relics remain in our present seas. Bivalve mollusks become diversified and abundant shellfish in the shallow waters of the coast, as is still the case today. The large nautiloid mollusks begin to decline, but they give rise to the ammonoids, ubiquitous in Mesozoic seas. Echinoderms, mainly crinoids or sea lilies, formed locally real underwater meadows. Devonian fishes can be divided into two major groups, the agnathans, jawless fishes, and the nathostomes, or jawed fishes. Of these two groups, the agnathans were the one that had the most difficulty in surviving the great biological crises of the late Devonian. Of the six groups known at the time, four will die out, and of those that survived, only a handful of species remain today, with the lampreys and hagfish. Among the nathostomes, the fates will be diverse. On the one hand, the last acanthodians disappeared after the Devonian, like the last placoderms. On the other hand, sharks and rays will prosper until our days. Several subgroups of sarcopterygians appeared during the Devonian, and one of them was the origin of the first tetrapods, a remarkable evolutionary success with today 29,000 species, not counting all those that have become extinct. Nowadays, only about 10 species of fish, with the coelacanths and the lungfish, belong to the sarcopterygians. Concerning the actinopterygians, these fish endowed with ray fins, it is an undeniable evolutionary success, with nearly 29,000 species crisscrossing the waters of the planet today, which makes it the largest group of vertebrates. Eusthenopteran was one of the sarcopterygians that could have gone on to conquer dry land. It had a pair of pelvic fins and a pair of fleshy pectoral fins, each connected to the body by a single bone. These bones are similar to those of the bony limbs of land-dwelling tetrapods, amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals. In these fish with fleshy fins, the swim bladder is modified to allow air breathing. As for the bony limbs, they were used to paddle in the water, but also to crawl on the shore. All indications are that Eusthenopteran could reach 1.8 meters, or 6 feet in length. However, most paleontologists agree that it never really emerged from the water. The Tiktaalik, thanks to certain aspects of its anatomy, seems close to land animals. It was discovered on Ellesmere Island in the Canadian Arctic Archipelago. Measuring up to 2.5 meters, or 8 feet, it has a flattened head, which is able to turn thanks to a mobile neck. Holes, which could be assimilated in nostrils, could probably allow it to breathe on Earth. Its fins, credited with solid bones and a joint comparable to that of a wrist, could have helped it to lift itself. Thus equipped, it could undoubtedly move in shallow waters, but also travel short distances on the banks. Like the crocodile, it must have roamed rivers and swamps, using its powerful fins and mobile neck to hunt other fish, which it tore apart with its sharp teeth. From the impressions left in the rocks in which its fossils were found, it is assumed that Tiktaalik did not stay out of the water for long. The transition from fish to tetrapod is one of the key events in the history of terrestrial life, leading to the colonization of the Earth's surface by vertebrates. Nevertheless, two major problems had to be solved for this change to occur: being able to breathe out of water and moving by walking. Acanthostega and Ichthyostega are among the oldest recorded legged vertebrates. They therefore provide essential clues to this mystery. Acanthostega bridges the gap between fish species with robust limb-like fins, such as those from Tiktaalik, and the first animals capable of living on land. The Acanthostega fossils are about 60 centimeters long. It had a flat head, gills to breathe in water, and a large caudal fin, ideal for swimming, but it was also equipped with lungs, allowing him to breathe air on the surface. Judging by its morphology and the fossilized aquatic plants from the Greenland sites where it was found, it lived in rivers and shallow marshes. It paddled with its legs through the vegetation in search of small prey. Its webbed feet ended in 8 toes. However, the lack of joints means that the legs probably struggled to support its weight on the ground. As for Ichthyostega, it is characterized as a large cousin of Acanthostega, since it could exceed 1 meter. He also had to live mainly in the water, as its powerful caudal fin and gills testify. However, it seems better adapted to terrestrial life, because its ribs and its 7-fingered limbs are more robust, thus more able to support weight. However, it was unable to walk like the current terrestrial vertebrates. It may have had to use its front legs to crawl, like a seal. As for the hind legs, they were probably used for additional support. This development of terrestrial and aquatic life was disrupted by the 3rd great biological crisis in the history of the Earth. 374 million years ago, a new mass extinction took place at the transition between the Frosnian and Faminian, 2 stages of the Devonian period. If the Ordovician mass extinction was a single brutal event, the Devonian mass extinction is reflected in various events spread over 3 million years. There was a climatic warming where the temperature reached 30 degrees Celsius, or 86 degrees Fahrenheit. In addition, numerous extraterrestrial impacts weakened the biosphere. In the bowels of the Earth, under present-day Siberia, an ocean of magma is boiling, ready to explode. A giant plume is formed. It is detached from the magmatic material, ready to explode to pierce the Earth's crust. Superheated gases are expelled from the depths of the Earth. The water starts to boil. The underwater earthquakes destroy the reefs. The eruptions are disproportionate. Thousands of tons of molten rock pour into the oceans. A lack of oxygen occurs worldwide at the end of the Frosnian. This phenomenon was named Kellwasser event. When the molten lava comes into contact with seawater, it generates toxic substances such as metals, silver, gold, chromium, iron, magnesium, and others. The ocean is contaminated. The marine fauna is devastated. Gases are released into the atmosphere, releasing carbon dioxide in massive quantities, and slowly, the air becomes loaded with greenhouse gases. Temperatures rise and ocean currents stop. The water reaches more than 30 degrees Celsius, or more than 86 degrees Fahrenheit at the equator. It is desolation. The aquatic environment is dying. 250,000 years after the first eruption, the Earth continues to pour magma. The atmosphere being saturated with carbon dioxide, the vegetation explodes and invades the surface of the Earth. Leaves have been falling for several thousand years, rotting on the ground and forming the first layer of humus on the planet. This nutrient-rich soil is carried by the rains and flows into the seas. Absorbed by the algae, they grow uncontrollably, stealing all the oxygen and asphyxiating the aquatic life. The coasts are infested and saturated with plants. These eruptions, which until now have been occurring at sea, are beginning to occur on land. The air becomes charged with sulfur dioxide, methane, and carbon dioxide. Huge eruptions occur. Gigantic clouds of ash several kilometers high are pushed back into the atmosphere. The planet is emptied of its entrails. It is chaos on Earth. The sky darkens. The burning ashes fall on the continents. Fires break out all over the world. The sun no longer penetrates the atmosphere. It is a volcanic winter. Temperatures around 30 degrees Celsius or 86 degrees Fahrenheit drop by 20 degrees Celsius or 68 degrees Fahrenheit. The plankton constituting the basis of the food chain is eradicated. The fish eggs are decimated. It's a hecatomb. The salvation comes from the trees producing oxygen. The temperatures end up stabilizing. The seasons reappear, and the life diversifies again. This extinction took away between 50% and 70% of the species on Earth. At the beginning of the Carboniferous, the continents La Russia and Gondwana reformed into a single continent, Little Pangaea. To the east, the ocean that exchanged Little Pangaea is called Prototetis. These continental masses are surrounded by the superocean, Panthalassa. This movement of tectonic plates causes the level of the oceans to rise, drowning a large number of plants. In the seas, more and more fish with bones appear. However, the oceans are dominated by echinoderms and crinoids that swarm on their bottom. In immense, luxuriant swamps, besides the arthropods that reign supreme, tetrapods and amphibians appear in the Devonian, as well as the first reptiles. On land, Devonian ferns gradually gave way to bark and seed trees. During fires or floods, these trees and plants were buried. Their decomposition followed. Thus preserved under a growing organic matter, this plant matter, buried deeply and heated during millions of years, is transformed into coal. This process is called carbonization. 330 million years ago, the conditions of coal formation were so favorable that the period was named Carboniferous. The masters of the Carboniferous rainforests were a group of vascular plants, the most common of which is called Lepidodendron. This majestic plant, which could climb up to 30 meters or 100 feet in height, had a trunk of 1 meter in diameter. The initial growth was upward, rapid, and unbranched. When this single massive shoot reached the canopy, then the trees opened into a beautiful crown of branches, the tips of which carried cones containing the spores. Another terrestrial plant from the Carboniferous period, Glossopteris, was found in the rocks of South America, Southern Africa, Madagascar, India, and Australia. Despite the fact that this plant is one of the main constituents of coal, little is known about it. It was a woody plant with a trunk of 80 centimeters in diameter. We can therefore imagine that the height of Glossopteris could also reach 30 meters or 100 feet. The Carboniferous was an era of giant insects, dragonflies the size of a large bird, cockroaches as big as a mouse, or scorpions of more than 50 centimeters or more than 20 inches. But the golden palm goes to Arthropleura, the largest invertebrate of this period. Although no complete fossil has yet been found, scientists agree that, according to the study of fragments and fossil traces, it could have reached 2 meters in length and 50 centimeters in width, i.e. 7 feet in length and 20 inches in width. This relative of the modern millipede was covered with a thick and heavy carapace made of chitin plates, a hard substance present in the exoskeleton of insects. It lived in tropical swamps covered with forests of tree ferns and other primitive plants. No fossilized mouths had yet been found, so scientists assume it was herbivorous, as fossilized droppings attributed to Arthropleura contain plant spores. Balanerpeton woodi was discovered in the famous Scottish deposit of East Kirkton inside hollow fossil tree trunks. One can imagine that it is a last refuge that these small amphibians found to protect themselves from a mud flow, which was fatal to them. The morphology of Balanerpeton is particular. With its rounded skull and its elongated body of about 20 centimeters, it looks like a salamander. Its wrists and its ankles, well ossified and robust, suggest a terrestrial locomotion. It has a large tympanic opening on the back of the skull, forming a rounded window, very useful for detecting surroundings. It is one of the rare fossil amphibians to have about 40 teeth on its upper jaw, while there are only about 20 on the lower jaw. Its diet was thus carnivorous, even insectivorous. As for reptiles and lizards, Hylonomus qualifies as the oldest specimen. The first discovery of Hylonomus fossils dates back more than 150 years on the Canadian island of Nova Scotia, which in the Carboniferous period was in the tropics. These were buried inside a hollow, fossilized tree stump. These trees grew far from the water, a sign that Hylonomus had evolved enough to spend its life on land. It lived by roaming the forests in search of insects and millipedes. Its body measured approximately 25 centimeters or 10 inches long, including its tail. Hylonomus reveals the dawn of reptiles, and with them, the appearance of the amniotic egg, which allowed them to free themselves from the aquatic environment. Vertebrates could then colonize the Earth, and reptiles dominated it for more than 200 million years. Animal life in the Carboniferous was also characterized by the development of giant insects. Meganeura stands out as the ambassador of gigantic dragonflies. With its 30 centimeter or 10 inch long and its 70 centimeter or 30 inch long wingspan, it could be compared to the size of a modern pigeon. Flying over rivers and lakes, it fed on small insects that it could spot with its piercing eyes. So what is the reason for the disproportionate size of the animals of the Carboniferous period? The question is still being debated. However, the most common explanation lies in the oxygen content of the air. Today, it is at 21%. It climbed to 35% in the Carboniferous. This enormous supply of oxygen came from the lush vegetation of the forests. Since oxygen promotes growth, insects, amphibians, and other invertebrates took advantage of it. Solitary or colonial corals built important reefs in the warm waters of the Paleothalia. Brachiopods, echinoderms, and mollusks also developed. In this last group, the goniatites are of great stratigraphic interest. While some stegocephalans experience the terrestrial environment, others evolve in aquatic environments. This is the case of Crassigerius scoticus. This giant tadpole fossil was discovered in old mines near Edinburgh. It was up to 2 meters long, or more than 6 feet in length. With its imposing skull and atrophied limbs, Crassigerius scoticus evolved, like a snake, in shallow fresh water. Also, its pelvis and its spinal column, little ossified, allowed a certain flexibility. Carnivorous, with a piscivorous tendency, it had several fangs inside its mouth, including one on the palate. Moreover, its cranial kinematics, comparable to that of snakes, attest that the animal could open its jaws widely, thus swallowing prey much larger than itself. Another crazy stegocephalus lived in the Carboniferous period. It is Spathocephalus miris. Of modest size, its skull of about 20 centimeters or almost 8 inches in the shape of a flattened disc resembles a frisbee. We notice on the upper top strange bean-shaped orbits very close to each other. Perhaps these sheltered eyeballs, glands, or electrosensory organs allowed it to detect its prey. Another characteristic of Spathocephalus is its dentition. It carries multiple tiny teeth, but no fangs. The bone of the lower jaw alone counts nearly 120 teeth. The end of the latter was equipped with small barbules, which indicates that it had to swallow large quantities of water and mud, which it filtered to extract small invertebrates or fish. In the Upper Carboniferous, the planet cooled down again, and although La Russia continent experienced relatively mild temperatures, the same was not true to the south. Indeed, the Gondwana continent is partly covered with ice, and this will last some 80 million years, until the beginning of the Permian. The Permian began about 295 million years ago. It will last about 50 million years. This period will close the Paleozoic era. The landmass Siberia-Kazakhstania welded to Gondwana. This new collision led to the formation of Pangaea, 450 million years after the breakup of Rodinia. Some continental blocks remain outside of Pangaea. These are North and South China. The waltz of the continents tends to modify the climate, and consequently, the Earth offers a new face. The lands of the Carboniferous, once swampy, humid, with lush vegetation, gave way to vast arid deserts and mountain ranges formed as a result of collisions of continental masses. During the Permian, the global sea level continued to drop until it reached a level close to our oceans today. To the east of Pangaea, we find the Tethys Ocean. As for the west of this megacontinent, it is bordered by the immense and unique ocean, the Phantalassa. In its center, the young continent Pangaea, which extends almost from one pole to the other, is subject to extreme and highly variable climatic conditions. Indeed, temperatures can vary from 0 degrees to 40 degrees Celsius in the same day, i.e. between 32 degrees Fahrenheit and 104 degrees Fahrenheit. The South Pole remains frozen since the glaciation that began at the end of the Carboniferous period. As for the rest of the continent, the climate is rather dry and arid. By this reunification of the continental masses, the terrestrial fauna was rather uniform. Among the continental vertebrates, reptiles became predominant and progressively supplanted the amphibians. We witness the rise of amniotes. Although today's amphibians are small, their ancestor Eriops did not go unnoticed. Its fossils were discovered in the lower Permian rocks of Texas and New Mexico. It is one of the major representatives of the Temnospondyls, a group of amphibians whose lifestyle was semi-aquatic and semi-terrestrial. Eriops could reach 2 meters, or 7 feet in length. Its short and powerful legs were composed of 4 fingers for the front legs and 5 fingers for the hind legs. The tail was modest in size and was a little over a third of the animal's total length. Its skull was huge, broad, and flat. Its predatory mouth revealed numerous sharp teeth. It probably divided its life between the swamps and the mainland, where it could feed on small fish and land animals. However, Arios has a major predator. It is Dimetrodon. Although it looks like a dinosaur, it is not its ancestor. Dimetrodon belongs to the group of synapsids, which predates the dinosaurs. It is one of the oldest super predators, living at the top of the food chain. Its name includes about 10 species, whose size ranges from 60 centimeters to nearly 5 meters, that is to say, between 25 inches and 16 feet. The most massive specimens could reach 300 kilograms, or 660 pounds, a weight superior to that of an adult grizzly. Its jaw bears formidable crenellated teeth and pointed canines at the front. Its bite must have been very effective in killing, cutting, and devouring large amphibians and fish. It had a powerful tail, muscular and robust legs. Its back was composed of long spines, in the shape of veil posed on the vertebrae. Scientists have long wondered about the role of this dorsal sail. Some paleontologists have suggested that this sail could have served as camouflage among the long reeds, as reinforcement of the spine, or even serve to regulate body temperature. Other scientists say the backsail was a colorful adornment to attract mates or intimidate rivals. The truth may be a mixture of several theories. The spectacular Permian crisis appeared 252 million years ago. It constitutes the greatest ecological catastrophe in the history of the Earth. It is marked by a drastic reduction in marine life. 96% of species left their lives in the adventure. The reef formations are once again in the front line. Other animals living near the bottom suffer an identical fate. Brachiopods are strongly reducing their diversity, as well as bryozoans and echinoderms, in particular, crinoids. According to scientific estimates, 75% of terrestrial animal and plant species have become extinct, including almost all reptiles. The causes of this extinction are still debated. The most often cited causes are ocean anoxia, a major volcanism in Siberia, a significant drop in sea level, or a combination of all of these causes. However, the hypothesis of volcanism dominates. The vast flows of lava that extend over 2 million square kilometers would have profoundly altered the Earth's climate. Thus, many areas remained uninhabitable. Plants seem to be the first to be affected. Indeed, a study of fossilized pollen grains, rocks, and sediments in Australia showed high quantities of nickel for the period in question. According to the researchers, it came from Siberia, vaporized by volcanic eruptions. It spread in the atmosphere to be deposited in various geographical points. Gradually, it poisoned the plant life, which declined. The disappearance of plants then affected the entire food chain, first herbivores, then carnivores. Nickel also polluted the oceans, which were already suffering from global warming. Also, the Earth's temperature rising to 50 degrees Celsius or 122 degrees Fahrenheit caused the evaporation of methane from the oceans, a greenhouse gas that would have worsened this natural global warming by decreasing the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere. The Permian-Triassic crisis thus marks the end of the Paleozoic and the beginning of the Mesozoic. Several species survived this mass extinction. Specialists call them the fauna of the catastrophe. Among them, the Istrosaurus, a mammalian reptile resembling a cross between a dog and a boar, a distant ancestor of the present mammals that spread over the surface of Pangaea. As life continued to evolve, new species would soon emerge. Dinosaurs would dominate the Earth throughout the Mesozoic period.